You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with James Hart Dyke. James, thanks so much for talking with me today.
It's a pleasure. Great to be with you.
And you're talking to me from Southwark, London, or somewhere else?
Actually, Brighton, kind of south of London, where I now live.
On the beach there, isn't it? Aren't you on the water down there?
It is. It's on the water, yes. It's sandwiched between the water and the beautiful kind of South Downs, which is a very beautiful kind of rolling landscapes.
And isn't that where they also have like a delicious fish and chips or something like that? Am I saying it right?
There's a whole mix of stuff. Fish and chips is the real English old seaside stuff, and there's the new stuff as well. It's a lovely mixture of kind of English seaside kind of stuff.
And what's happening in your studio now? What are you working on at the moment?
Mainly, kind of, I do commissions, but mainly I've fixed on a project in Patagonia, which is kind of a series of landscape paintings from Patagonia. And last November, I travelled there with two kind of climbers, and they climbed, and I kind of tagged along behind them. And I took my paints with me, and I made little studies and drawings and photographs. And then from that, I'm now developing larger paintings of the mountains, which is my passion, really.
And that's been in your work, of course, and you've done a lot of landscapes. Is this something that is a commission, those Patagonia works?
No, it's something that will form an exhibition at the end of the year with a gallery in London. It's something that, I mean, the door opened for me to go to Patagonia to paint these mountains. And I spent a lot of my life painting mountains or big landscapes. So that's kind of my new project, and that's what I'm focused on for the autumn this year, really.
But the research for that is unusual. You're also hiking and doing some traveling that sounds like it's not easy. Or is it?
No, it's not easy at all. And I have a love for, actually historically, I have a love for a lot of the old climbers. One of the first climbers were actually artists. There's a whole kind of history to it. I love the idea of bringing kind of physicality together with painting. And I find that comes together beautifully with painting mountains or big landscapes. I enjoy painting them in a very physical way, I can walk 10 miles and then make a painting of it. I find that's a wonderful way of really understanding landscape in a physical way, not just making the painting, but actually, enduring the landscape in some way. I find that combination of painting and physicality very exciting for me. It's what my painting's about, really.
Well, and so much of your work in your past practice seems to also be about that type of physicality where you are actually getting into the landscape. And I'm thinking of when you were embedded with the British forces in war zones, that would seem to be an extreme example of dealing with a landscape.
It is. And it came that those kind of commissions with the military. It's a strange tradition in the UK that regiments commission artists to make paintings for the regiment. And they often take artists with them to war zones. So quite often you'll find in a regiment in a war zone there'll be an artist there painting away at somewhere, which is a bit curious. But it's an old tradition.
It is curious. I mean, tell me a little bit about that process, because it seems almost like an impossibility or an oxymoron. How does an artist, coexist in a war zone and set up an easel as you might do and focus on a landscape amid and surrounding by what could easily be a dangerous situation or is a dangerous situation?
It is. On one level, it's very dangerous and tricky. Another level, it's kind of quite comical in a way, finding an artist. I know I've painted in Baghdad, and I've had two soldiers looking after me, and were standing there with my easel painting the cross swords in Baghdad. And military people have gone past in their jeeps and armed to the teeth and thought we're completely bonkers, really, painting. It's kind of slightly eccentric. But it's a tradition that goes on. And actually for the regiments, it's a very important part of their tradition. They always have paintings made of where they go. And quite often those paintings are quite kind of topographical, should we say. And they don't always make the greatest paintings. But on the back of that, one can make very interesting sketchbooks and studies of kind of life in the military world, which an artist maybe sees in a different way, really. I think it's very powerful.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting perspective and perhaps why it's... something of a tradition there, which I'd like to explore a little more, because in the United States it certainly isn't a tradition, and I don't know, or it was at one time, but isn't any longer as far as I know. And I think it's an important tradition because, and as far as I know, and I don't know how many other armies commission artists around the world, but it's fascinating, kind of, I don't know if it reaches back to the British Empire, this kind of document of what's happening, but how does it actually become a part of the troops' experience or military history? Does it go into a museum after that? How is it seen or used by the military? Because that's part of why they're there, right? You're there. They want to have your work afterwards or see what you've done and show it to a particular group of people, I would think.
Yes, I mean, on a general level, they show the each regiment has a collection of paintings, and they show that in their mess, and they through that they document the history of their regiment, which they're very proud of. The regiment's a very powerful part of their life, and it's their family, so they're very keen to present their history through their paintings, which continue today. Interestingly, painting war zones kind of goes back to the old newspapers before photography. They could get artists into battlefields and get drawings done on the battlefield and then get those drawings back to the newspapers in London or wherever, and they could be published in the newspaper, they would be the big sellers of the newspapers before photography. So a drawing from the actual battlefield was a very kind of valuable commodity, and it's a very real thing which would sell newspapers. So that's kind of historical interest. I find that very interesting, that historical kind of link.
Yet that is an interesting historical link, but of course that's not how they're used now. As you're saying, the troops are looking at them. These are paintings. They could also have a photographer out there, but these are paintings that you're making. The troops are looking at them. What do you think the difference is between looking at the troops looking at paintings that have been made on the field, if this is a fair question, and photographs, because it takes a bit of also visual literacy to understand a bit about paintings and to be sensitive to it. As you were saying, some people drive by and they think, that looks bonkers out there, that looks crazy what you're doing. But, you know, we know as an art form, it's something quite beautiful and a communicator in a way. How do the troops react to it? And is there a relationship between the troops and this work, do you think?
I think there is a relationship on many different levels. On one level, it's simply an image of something they recognise, and hopefully on other levels, there are deeper kind of deeper understandings of that image or associated work. I think work on a lot of different levels. I mean, obviously, a battlefield is a highly charged emotional place, and in a way, for an artist, it's kind of a gold mine in a way. Although extremely difficult to make some sense of it or make some kind of artwork. I mean, there's one, on one level is the documenting physically what you see. Another level is conveying some kind of emotional thing more to that work than just a kind of image. And I think it works on many different levels for different kinds of people. It's a kind of art form that I think is very powerful, and is, I think it's still very valid actually, and there's still a long way to go.
I think so too. Are you the only painter that works for the British forces, or are there other painters as well?
No, there's quite a group of British painters who do this. It's quite a gang of people, really. It's quite a, it is traditionally, it's carried on by every regiment. So there's quite a kind of stream of artists heading into military barracks and coming out again.
That's fantastic. And you were saying all these paintings end up, I imagine, some of them in museums, but also in all the mess halls so that the troops can see them?
Is that where
most of them are displayed? Yeah.
They are, yes. Also, I think on a more national level, the British War Museum in London, they do commission artists as well to go out to war zones, and they may make more abstract kind of work, which is more appropriate for a museum. And they exhibit their work in the Imperial War Museum. They have a very good collection of paintings and artwork there. So that spans into a more contemporary art world, should we say. So I think it spans right from documenting, just making drawings and documenting something, to something very contemporary and abstract, or however you want to take it, really. It's a very varied kind of form of art.
And you've had an unusual career, or at least among the many artists I've interviewed, an unusual career in terms of accompanying the Prince of Wales on official artists' royal tours and being an artist in residence for the British Secret Intelligence Service. We could talk about so many things, but could you talk to me a little bit about what it means? Because this seems very mysterious to be an artist in residence for the British Secret Intelligence Service.
Yes, it's. I suppose it's slightly linked to the idea of the military commissioning artists to record what they do. There's a kind of tradition in the UK of companies. I've worked for many companies, actually, the Royal Family, as you said, and also the British Secret Service. They also came up with the idea of commissioning an artist to commemorate their centenary. And so it slightly falls under the whole kind of banner of artwork in the UK. And I seem to have somehow stumbled upon it. I think, actually, strangely, through landscape and kind of adventure through landscape, I've kind of linked into these forms of these kind of forms of art. I think it's very much art out of the studio, art on the go, and it's extremely difficult, I have to say. I struggle with it a lot. It's very difficult.
But how does the British Secret Intelligence Service benefit from your work? And if you can tell me what kind of subjects are you painting for them, and how does it benefit them? I can understand the what it means to paint in a war zone, especially after talking to you, and the importance of the troops seeing that as well as other people. But the Secret Intelligence Service, how does that help them, or where is that work displayed?
That project came through their centenary, and they wanted to celebrate their centenary in some way. Obviously, they can't bring a photographer into their environment, because it's going to show up too much of what they do. So they came up with the idea of bringing in artists, and I managed to get the project to do this. And in a way, that's really exciting, because you could really see there the act of drawing became a very powerful device in that particular world where a camera cannot go. And so at one level, and very much to begin with, I started making paintings or images of everyday life. So sitting in the offices, everyday stuff. It's quite difficult, since it's quite mundane on one level. The level is very exciting. By the end of the project, I was making much more surreal work, which was much more exciting to me, which, Lord, their world is quite surreal. So there were paintings of plastic ducks and flying circles, and it became very surreal from the work. I enjoyed that.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Why did they become surreal, and what did that represent? Because that's quite a departure for you, of course.
Well, in a way, yes, but I mean, I wanted to convey more than just documenting people sitting at desks and doing what they do. I wanted to convey more of the excitement and the strange, surreal world it can be in. It can be a very surreal world. It's a very kind of theatrical world on one level. And so I wanted to convey that through the paintings. It seemed to me appropriate to go into much more kind of surreal kind of paintings. I found those very exciting. Paintings which, some of the paintings, the public are unable to understand. They just look a bit bizarre and weird. And quite often in the world of the Secret Intelligence Service, one is presented with stuff which looks completely unfathomable. But underneath it, there's some reason for this kind of situation. So I was trying to convey that slightly strange, abstract, surreal world which they are in.
You're conveying it through symbols that some people, viewers, are not going to read. Is that what you're saying? There's symbols that point to specific aspects of that world?
There are definitely symbols, symbolic paintings. Where there are symbols in the paintings which only those people who work at the British Secret Intelligence Service would understand. And I find that quite exciting, to put that out on the wall in the public realm and have little codes which people understand and other people won't understand. It's kind of an exciting part of their world, really.
Mm. And your beginning studies were as an architect at the Royal College of Art. Is that correct? You weren't studying visual art there?
No, I wasn't. I've always painted, but I tried to do something more sensible, should we say, in terms of a career. So I went into architecture, which I still am very passionate about. And I was thinking I might move to painting at the Royal College of Art, but I didn't do that. I stayed with architecture for a bit. And actually, the end of my architectural course, I ended up getting all commissions to make paintings of buildings. That's my entree into the kind of painting world.
And so you're still fascinated with architecture. Do you feel that that also influences your paintings? I mean, you're not painting architecture very often, but that's a powerful sensibility to be schooled in, and I would think that would influence your work as well.
Very much so. I love a lot of poster poppy art. I enjoy that, and I've used that in some of my paintings. I enjoy going into that zone. I find it very difficult commercially to kind of sell those works, but I very much enjoy abstract and spatial, kind of spatial work. I'm very interested in anything spatial. The landscape really is spatial, and I've done many things in my life which are, in a sense, spatial, from jumping out of aeroplanes, which is one extreme example, but to simply walking around the mountains. But it's all about space and spatial stuff. And I think in my landscape paintings, I'm searching for that space, really, on a lot of different levels. And I've also moved the more kind of graphic-y art. Again, I was playing with spatial elements. There's some continuity, although they look very different. There is some kind of continuity throughout that work.
You know, it's funny that you say that you chose architecture because, of course, you wanted to be practical and have a career. It that sounds like, you know, what a parent would want their son to be, right? Have a respectable job as opposed to being an artist. I would imagine that was a surprise to them that, I mean, you know, if your parents were living then, that that you became an artist and a successful one as well, because that wasn't how you expected things to turn out, I imagine.
No, well, I've painted since the age of 8, really quite, you know, clearly. I've been painting after seeing a work by John Constable when I was 8 years old. I really was painting quite seriously since then. And I actually tried to give it up and tried to do everything I could do to give it up, because I thought it wasn't a thing for me to do. I should be doing my sport and all those things. And so I've always had this kind of conflict between sport and art. But now I've actually suddenly found that actually they go together for me. And that makes more sense about what I do in terms of landscape and the war zones and working for the British Secret Service. There's a kind of physicality and painting together, which I've always enjoyed. It's been part of my life, really.
That's very interesting that does become your sport, because early on in education, that does seem to be emphasized in so many schools. What is your sport? And it's kind of a wonderful turn of event to see that come together, because, of course, there isn't a name for your sport. Art isn't quite a sport, but you've made it into something like that with a strong physicality of what you're doing, as you're saying, jumping out of airplanes and hiking and going, you know, mountains and traveling and war zones. That is something of a sport, I guess you could say.
It's funny. I find painting. I make a lot of references to something like take skydiving, where, you know, it's one level it's a terrifying thing. Another level, it's actually a very sensitive and delicate sport. And I find the tension between those two elements very exciting. As I do in painting, one makes very light, delicate brush marks, and then there's very bold, brash brush marks. And there's a tension between that stuff which makes exciting art to me. And I find the correlation between, you know, sport and painting, I find it's the same kind of thing. I find that very exciting, that kind of skydiving of brashness with the sensitivity to it, and painting of the bold brush mark and the very light brush mark. I find it is a very physical, and they seem the same to me in some ways.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Of course, there's a physicality to painting and the gesture and brush strokes. That makes a lot of sense. Mm. It's wonderful talking to you, James, and about what seems to me to be a very exciting and thrilling and even romantic sounding artist practice. Is there anything that I should have asked or you want to add about anything from upcoming shows to anything else before I ask you the last question?
No, I think that's very interesting what you've been talking about for me as well. It's good for me to talk about it. It often sits in my head and I don't have much time to, you know, discuss it. So it's good. It's great for me to hear it.
So let me ask you what you're reading at the moment, which is what I ask everyone at the end.
Interesting. I'm reading a climbing book, a book about climbing called Forget Me Not, which is really about the tension between a relationship of two climbers. One who, the husband, who's a very, very, very good climber, extreme climber, and the wife, who's a good climber, but not so keen, and the business of making a family in between the life of climbing. And I've only got halfway through it. So but that's kind of the journey I'm on.
James, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been my pleasure.
Thank you. It's been fun for me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.